Defense Department bigwigs have been courting Silicon Valley, hoping to learn ways to become more agile and innovative, and maybe finding new technologies to keep a lethal edge. Local venture capitalist Jonathan Aberman has been working with a group known as the 2030 to quantify the level of corporate and startup innovation right here in the D.C. area.
Well, the 2030 group, which is a group of community leaders here, many of the folks that have been involved in driving regionalism for a significant period of time, have been working with Stephen Fuller, the economist from George Mason University. And for a long time now, Stephen has been very much advocating we need to understand where our jobs are going to come from for the 21st century. And he's done some great work in that regard. The 2030 group asked me, as a community leader involved in technology innovation, to take a look with some data scientists at where I think we're going to see our best growth in high tech employment in the coming years. And that's what I'm working on right now with their help.
And your sense, though, that there is a lot of innovation in high technology that's happening in this region that may not be all that well recognized. Certainly the federal government seems to be looking across to Silicon Valley for its needs.
Well, exactly. So first of all, this region suffers from a misapprehension that we're not entrepreneurial. And even though our work is still in progress, I can tell you that the data already shows that there's more entrepreneurial activity in this region than there is in Silicon Valley, measured, for example, by the number of startups that get formed. Because the thing is that we tend to talk about startups in the context of technology startups. But if you define a startup as a new business started by an entrepreneur to make money, we are much more significant player in that.
If you're starting up a technology company and it catches on, there's a lot greater possibility for employment and also revenue than there is, say, if you're starting another custom cupcake company.
Well, you're absolutely right. But here's the thing. I'm not suggesting that the numbers are just custom cupcake companies. What actually the numbers show, if you look at, for example, the most rapidly growing companies in the United States, measured by different people like Inc. magazine, for example, this region consistently, year after year, tops the list. What's interesting about the data is that we're learning our entrepreneurship is around services and delivering innovation to government and elsewhere in that way, solutions and services. And the first thing we have to do as a region is we have to redefine ourselves as being entrepreneurial, but being entrepreneurial in the way we are entrepreneurial, not compared to Silicon Valley, but compared to ourselves. And that's the first thing the data is showing.
Because you say that there are certain innovation assets that exist in the DC area that are particularly strong that may not be as strong out west.
So, for example, as we start to look at the data, we're starting to see clustering around certain what I would call industrial concentrations. For example, cybersecurity or big data analytics. We are really quite good at it if you look at from the standpoint of concentration. We have an amazing potential in areas like precision medicine and life sciences is another example. You know, these are areas where money from the federal government is flowing into our region as far as we can tell from the data. And I would say that if you're serious about growing a technology community, you should always grow off what you're good at and where you have concentrations rather than growing off things that you're not so good at.
How important is the proximity of the federal agencies and the policymakers there, also the federal laboratories and all the grant funding that originates in Washington?
Well, that's a big question. And frankly, that's a lot of the work that we're doing with our team over the next couple of months. My preliminary viewpoint is that if you look at our economy, we have had three tremendous economic macro cycles that benefited from proximity to the federal government. The first one was the Cold War and the space race, where the government contract industry really grew up in the 1970s and 80s. The second one was the internet bubble and boom, which was largely driven by companies like MCI, WorldCom, and PSINet, and AOL, which all were based here because they were proximate to the government regulators and the internet protocols and backbone. The third one is this current wave of cybersecurity that we're seeing that's driving a lot of the activity in the government contracting community and a growing number of startups. In each of those circumstances, it was proximity to the federal government and regulators that allowed our region to grow. The challenge we have right now, Tom, is that a lot of the new emerging opportunities, things like robotics, advanced material sciences, manufacturing, space, and so forth, where the vast dollars in R&D are going, may or may not be spent here. And so proximity to Washington will only be a benefit if we take advantage of making our bets in our universities and our labs and in our startups in areas where the federal R&D dollars are going. Because as you know, federal R&D dollars are the seed corn for our economy and where things go over the next 20 to 30 years. And that's where we need to be. So what we're trying to do is identify the areas where the proximity of the federal government can be a benefit. So for example, precision medicine, the idea of providing healthcare based upon somebody's genetic predisposition, could dramatically change healthcare. But in order to do so, we'll have to change the way people are compensated for provided health care. You'll no longer be able to pay on a procedure. You may pay on the basis of somebody staying well. That will require changes in Medicare and Medicaid rules, for example. So you can't grow precision medicine unless you change the regulations. But Fairfax Inova and GW and other places are making big bets in that.
We're speaking with Jonathan Aberman, Managing Director of Amplifier Ventures and Tandem NSI. And what about the nature of capital that is here in this region, the D.C. region, versus the nature of capital out west? We've talked about this before, but it's very, very different. How does that affect startup growth?
So it affects startup growth if you have an economic model that depends upon venture capital for startup formation. In other words, if you have an ecosystem that's dependent upon that for your primary business formation, you'd have a problem. The good news is that our region doesn't depend upon venture capital for startup formation because, as I described earlier, what the data is showing is most of our startups and grow-ups actually grow off customer revenue or contractor services. Venture capital for our market is a lagging indicator, not a leading indicator. By that, I mean when we have companies that start to achieve commercial success. For example, if you look at, say, what happened with AOL or what happened with Tenable Security more recently, when a company achieves prominence, venture capital will come in from out of market. For comparison's purposes, when we had the internet boom in the late 1990s around telecom, which we were very strong in, we got a lot of venture capital from the market. But here's the thing, Tom. Each year, the federal government spends $140 billion on federal R&D.
Which is a much bigger number than the venture capital number in Silicon Valley.
Nationally. The national aggregate of venture capital, friends and family financing, and angel financing, the three primary equity sources for startup formation together, are less than federal R&D. So when I look at the data, when I look at the relationship between federal R&D and innovation, my message to all of us is, let's grow our gardens off the river that's available to us instead of asking to divert rivers that's flowing elsewhere.
But isn't federal R&D much more focused on basic research that may or may not have commercial application anytime soon? I'm thinking of the discovery of gravitational waves in the universe.
Absolutely. So there are a couple of answers to that. The first one is that venture capitalists don't actually create new industries. Federal R&D creates new industries. I could draw a hard line for you between every industrial wave since the railroads and the Department of Defense. Somebody has to create the seed corn for our society, and that largely has been federal R&D. Once R&D advances to the point where it's interesting, whether it's GPS or it's a new type of material, a new type of glass, new protocol for the internet, the commercial sector can take that on and provide venture capital and growth capital. But the best way to think about it, again, is that venture capitalists don't create industries. Venture capitalists finance industrial waves. And Silicon Valley has been really, really good at funding industrial waves, popularizing things. What we need to understand and appreciate is that regions that are good at taking seed corn for the next industrial waves are where the 21st century is going to be won and lost. And that's where I think Washington's opportunity is.
All right. So your research is ongoing. What is the timeline for it? When will you deliver it and how will it be used?
I hope that what will happen is, as you and I have a conversation today, we will continue to have conversations like this over the coming months and we'll raise awareness and that coalitions will form around executing against some of these opportunities. This is a call to action. I'm a community leader. I believe that it's important with the help of the 2030 group to speak to what we're learning and look for coalitions to form. The data will be completed over the next 2 months or so, and we'll be releasing some sort of report. And I'll be looking to continue to talk with you and the rest of the community to try to execute against it.